It's the 9 o'clock hour on Cairo Nights. Mace and Mike. It's the home stretch, baby. 98973, State Roofing text line. If you want to be a part of the conversation, that's a great way to do it. We have a guest.
When the U.S. government approved a $2.2 trillion aid package, contained within that was a sizable chunk of money, better than $300 billion, specifically for small businesses to get what would be the equivalent of a forgivable loans or loans, low-interest loans that could be forgiven if they spend it on certain things like payroll and whatnot. But the rollout of this program has been a little bit with fits and starts. Some banks, even today, decided that they're no longer taking applications for this. In the middle of all this is Lane Powell's Lewis Horowitz. Lewis is a tax attorney and a tax expert. He is also the, I think, the chair of the taxation team at Lane Powell. And before we get into it, so Lewis, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Before we get into anything specific, I was realizing that my girlfriend asked me, so what does Lane Powell do? And my only answer was everything, because I really couldn't pin it down. So how do we describe exactly what Lane Powell does? And that's where you're obviously
Without turning this into an infomercial, we are a full-service law firm here in the Pacific Northwest, offices focusing on from Anchorage, Seattle, and Portland. And we've been around for at least 140 years, maybe longer, depending on how you count. And we basically represent businesses of all sizes, from the startup company practice, especially in the tech practice, up to a few public companies. And so we're all over the map. And so many of our clients are struggling so much as a result of the COVID-19 virus.
Oh, absolutely.
So, which is how we got into this.
So let's talk a little bit. I was on, I attended the what was both excellent and frustrating GeekWire roundtable last Friday for small businesses. I'm also a small business owner and I'm a reporter, so I'm deeply up to my throat in this loan process. Can you tell us, first off, a little bit about how much is in this loan package, this $300+ billion loan package, and what it is designed to do, and then what are the issues with actually obtaining one of these loans if you are a small business owner?
Sure. And I'm going to use a lot of generalities here.
Okay.
And I apologize, but if we get into the minutiae, this call will go on for quite some time.
Fair enough.
Basically, the government took the $2.2 trillion and they divided it up into different pockets, with $349 billion going toward what they refer to as small businesses, businesses under 500 employees. There are some exceptions for franchisees and hotels. So, you know, if you have seven hotels at seven different locations, you can apply the 500 employee test at each location. But for your average, you know, restaurant owner that has one restaurant, maybe two, they're readily going to qualify under the 500 employee test. That test applies to both full and part-time employees. Unclear, I think it applies to temporary employees also, but a little less clear as to how it applies to an employee that's been furloughed or on standby. If you have fewer than 500 employees, you can apply for a loan that is based on effectively 2.5 times your average monthly payroll over the last year. Now, there's some adjustments to that. If you have employees earning more than $100,000 a year, you have to carve that back, so no employee can be deemed to make more than $100,000. You're entitled to add on health insurance and retirement plan benefits to that. But basically, it's 2.5 months' payroll.
Okay.
You take your 2.5 months' payroll on average, and that's the amount of loan you can apply for.
Well, that sounds simple so far.
It does. It sounds simple. It's very hard.
Hmm, right.
This was dropped on the banks without being ready for it.
Hmm.
And this is at something like a 5,000% increase in the normal lending for small businesses under the SBA loan program. And so they weren't ready for it.
So tell me a little
bit
about that.
Treasury Department.
Tell me a little bit about that number. So what would be a standard month for the SBA or standard year for the SBA to do small business loans? And what are we doing now?
So I'm repeating numbers I've heard, so I can't warrant them. But the 100 largest SBA lenders lend about $3.5 billion in a year. So that's effectively the market. Maybe it's $4 billion. Now we're talking about lending $349 billion, most of it in the PPP program, the what's called the Paycheck Protection Plan program. And that program is trying to lend hundreds of billions of dollars in as short as a few weeks.
Wow.
It's not like your normal SBA program because these are low-doc loans. Frankly, they're closer to no-doc loan.
And by no-doc loan, you mean you don't have to provide a whole lot of documentation. You just have to provide the right documentation for the bank to ostensibly approve this if you can get in line fast enough.
Correct. And you just said something that I think is very important. Nobody knows how long these loans will last before they run out of allocations. And the SBA, in an effort to give clear and simple guidance, I think created some problems because they said first come, first serve. And that's scaring a lot of people because it means that if you sit on this issue for even a few days, you don't know if you're going to get it.
Right.
Now, if you're a business owner who's been decimated by the COVID-19 crisis, you don't have a choice, so you've got to get in line fast. And it's complicated further because the Treasury Department has allowed banks to favor their existing customers. So once you favor your existing customers, if your bank isn't lending to you, that's a problem. And on Sunday afternoon, Wells Fargo said they would only make loans to customers with 50 or fewer lenders, not 500 or fewer.
Wow. So that's a huge cutoff. And can the banks that participate in this, I mean, I know that at times the federal government will put standards that you have to meet if you're a bank, if you want to take advantage of this money. And I'm assuming that something in the pot here sweetened it for the banks to be the pass-through agents for this money.
Yes.
Can they operate by essentially kind of their own set of rules on this, or did this federal government give them sort of clear, bright line distinctions on what they can do and can't do when distributing this money?
Well, wearing a hat as a borrower representative this week, I think the guidelines is very clear as to what the bank should ask for and what it needs. But bankers tend to be thoughtful, conservative, cautious people, and you want your bankers to be that type of that personality type. And I think some banks are having a little trouble limiting the scope of the information that they request. Plus, banks have a know your customer requirement, which encourages banks to lend only to their existing customers. But not every bank has an SBA desk, and not every bank has a portal ready to handle the volume of loans that are coming in.
I noticed that, for example, when I was looking at this weekend for my business, that KeyBank was not at all ready to go. And I'm not blaming KeyBank. I mean, I think all the banks struggled mm-hmm. to catch up with this, but they had you call and they said, well, we'll try it in a few hours. And then pretty soon it became a few days. And then finally, I think on Monday, the process went live for people who are KeyBank customers. It didn't appear that KeyBank was opening it up beyond that, even though the original idea, I think, was that you would be able to take on other banking customers. But it looks like it's almost mm-hmm. effectively limited that you have to go through the bank that you already do your business banking with. And so if your bank isn't up to speed quickly, that money is a central pool and it's draining as your bank, I'm not saying dithers, but as your bank tries to get up to speed on how to loan this money. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely. I believe KeyBank is making a decision today about whether or not they want to limit their portal only to existing customers. Of course, I'm not sure, even if they did, how long you have to be an existing customer. You might be able to open up a checking account online this afternoon and be ready to apply tomorrow. But if you're a business, you're going to need certain documents to prove to the bank that you are worthy of being a customer. And these are the Know Your Customer requirements are very have serious penalties if the banks ignore them. They're designed to prevent money laundering. They want to know that the person you're dealing with is who they say they are, and they want to know that they have authority to act on behalf of whatever company they purport to represent, and they want to know who the company is. And that can sometimes take a few days.
What then? Where did the issue start with this legislation being written? I mean, is it that the language in the original legislation is just not clear enough for the banks to be able to follow the marching orders? Or is it this that the banks are not, you know, given? I mean, I know in my specific situation, sometimes when you call the bank, you're dealing with a pretty junior person in the bank who may not be familiar with how to do some of these things. I mean, where is the bottleneck happening, in your opinion?
To the extent there's blame, it's probably in the statute itself that was passed by Congress and signed by the president. I say I'm cautious about blaming them because, after all, they were in a rush and they had to spend $2.2 billion in an effort to stimulate the economy and save all these businesses. So I don't know if any of us in their position could have done a better job. But the program is, I think, maybe more complicated than it needs to be and doesn't give the banks the comfort level that they want to make the loans without creating liability for themselves. They got some comfort on last Thursday night when the Treasury and the SBA issued what's called the interim final rule that outlines how the program works. Came out literally the night before the banks were supposed to start lending. So if you're a banker and you have rules that come out at 7 o'clock on the night before you're supposed to lending, you, of course, you know, you stop and you call your lawyers and you sort of think about it. But even that did not give all banks as much comfort as they want. And in the past, when a bank fails to dot the I's and cross the T's on an SBA loan, the SBA, concerned about fraud, won't guarantee the loan. And that leaves the bank stuck with a horrible loan. You know, you take a complicated program and you drop it on conservative bankers and hungry entrepreneurs, all of whom are stressed out and none of whom are sleeping well.
Right.
It's a recipe for a nightmare.
Yeah. Lewis, do you think that this whole SBA loan program is going to help?
Yes. I do think they're going to get out $300+ million into the economy. I think there will be some pump priming just as a result of people having money. I think we haven't talked yet about the forgiveness component of the loan, but to the extent a borrower spends the money on qualifying expenses, the borrower can have a chunk of the loan, probably not all of it, but a large chunk of it forgiven shortly after he takes out the money. And the biggest expense that's going to qualify is payroll. So a restaurant that continues to make payroll will have a chunk of their borrowing actually forgiven very quickly. The difficulty is it doesn't cover all of your payroll costs, and it's sort of enough money for many businesses to survive, enough money, even if it's not forgiven as a loan, to sort of allow people to keep their business idling while they wait for COVID to pass over. I sort of made the analogy that it's a lot like a getaway car. You want to keep the engine running so that
when you're
finished robbing that bank, you can get in and drive off. And so, I think this money will help many businesses survive.
Do you think that the forgiveness component, if I understand it correctly, let's just say there are categories that mean that you don't have to pay that back with no penalty. For example, like you said, payroll. If someone were to take out a loan, let's just talk to any businesses that are listening right now, they're take out a loan to pay for payroll. And it may be just almost exclusively payroll, because I know that I think you can also pay your lease. You can do a few things out of the program. And I think there's categories of things that are forgivable, but we know for a fact that the payroll component is. If you then use all of that money for payroll expenses, does it effectively work like a grant?
No.
Okay.
It's supposed to. Hmm. And everybody thinks it does. But there are two, let's assume, again, we'll go with your example of a business that has only payroll costs and is not paying rent or more interest. The loan amount is based upon 2.5 months average payroll over the prior year. The forgiveness is for 8 weeks of payroll. So right there is a 25% haircut.
Hmm. Right.
Second, the payroll costs are not adjusted. When you determine the amount of the loan, you don't adjust for withholding taxes. But the amount forgiven is the amount of payroll costs incurred in the eight-week period after you have a loan, less the cost of FICA and employee withholding taxes.
Oh, okay. So
your average, right. So you're only getting about 75 cents of every dollar, depending on your employees, if they're lower wage employees, maybe you're getting 77% to 80%. If you're higher wage employees, you're quickly going to drop to about 72%.
So then, if while you're calculating this, I mean, would it make, if a business is out there doing this, would it make more sense? Because you said, like you said before, you can borrow up to 2.5 times your monthly payroll. So should you be borrowing from what your actual payout payroll is, or should you be borrowing for this larger amount that includes the taxes and the contributions and all the rest of the stuff that goes into all the cash outlay that goes into a whole payroll system for a business? Does that make sense?
I've been encouraging my clients, even the ones that hate debt and don't want to take on undebt, to borrow the maximum amount that they can, which is 2.5 times their average monthly payroll. And again, this is a payroll costs is a defined term, it's adjusted, but it's basically 2.5 months of your average payroll. The amount that is not forgiven is still on a 1% two-year loan, unsecured. It's the best deal any small business is ever going to get from anyone. And so given that we don't know how long COVID-19 is going to last, given that we don't know what other stresses are going to be placed on businesses, you want to have as much liquidity as possible because it gives you as much breathing room as you need. And if it means you have to pay back the loan, so be it. My personal belief is that many borrowers will not appreciate how much is not forgiven. They're going to owe a great deal of money. They are not going to be able to pay it. And either they are going to default, and the federal government will lose money, or much more likely, I think the federal government is going to have to extend the repayment period. Mm.
That is Lewis Horowitz. He's the taxation team chair at Lane Powell Law Firm. Lewis, thank you so much for joining us on Cairo Nights and explaining this very complicated thing to us.
My pleasure. I wish everybody luck. I wish them health. And we're going to get through this. Just hang on for the ride.
And we will be back with more Cairo Nights right after this.
JC's on, turn up the microphone. She's talking sports, so you're about to learn a ton. At 8:33, she hangs out with Mike and me. And you know from the song that now's the time with Stacey's on.
Stacy Joe.
Hello.
Hello. Stacey. How are you on a Monday?
I'm okay. We had a pretty good show, all things considered.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Everyone mostly in a good mood. Everyone's trying. I did get one person that texted in, "Shut up, Stacy," but everyone else was really nice.
That's not just one. That's not bad.
Laughed. That wasn't Tom texting.
That
was
it. That's good. That's good. That's a good one. So yeah, we had a bit of news on Genevieve and Clowney this morning that ended up not really going anywhere. There was reports that he had some real interest from the Cleveland Browns, but it doesn't sound like a deal is really being worked on right now. So still on Clowney watch on the sports side.
What have you been watching this weekend?
Oh, man. Well, I already finished Tiger King. As you know, Mike, don't worry. We won't talk about it this time.
I've got one left, by the way.
You heard that they're putting out another episode, right? One
yes,
more?
Yes, yes.
I did, and I was really confused because it was by the guy that stole the zoo. And I was like, so is this him? Everyone looks bad in this documentary. Every single person looks bad. There is no protagonist. So I'm like, is this something that he's organizing so that he looks better and he's filming it himself? Or is this like an episode of like a Where Are They Now type episode from Netflix? I have no idea, but obviously I will be watching it because I don't have a lot else going on right now. I did catch Netflix's Unorthodox, which is a 4-part series on this girl. It's this wonderful actress. I think she's from Israel, and this is the first thing I've seen her in. She's fairly young. I think she's in her early 20s, and she plays a Orthodox Jewish woman who flees this neighborhood in New York to go live in Germany, and then it's just her adjustment from a very, very Orthodox community to obviously a community of young people who are not Orthodox. And so it's based or inspired by a true story, and it's really good. We started an episode. It's 4 episodes. We started one the other night at like 10, and we ended up watching all 4. So I was up in an irresponsible hour, but it was worth it. It was really good. I recommend it.
What's the tone of it? Is it a drama or a comedy?
It is a drama. Don't do it as like a feel good, like, oh, I just want something to take my mind of off of how sad everything is. Do it if you're in the mood for like, oh, I can watch something with some substance. But if you're looking for like, okay, what can I replace Tiger King with? I probably wouldn't recommend it.
I have one. Now we can't get into Tiger King again, but I just do want to.
We're gonna have a Tiger King jar where we have to put a dollar in it every time we mention it.
That's not a bad idea. I do want to mention that because you said there were no protagonists. I still have one episode left, so anything could happen. But I do think out of everybody, the guy that seems the most normal, I guess, is the guy that made the reality show. The guy in the black hat, you know, who's sitting there sipping coffee like the reality TV producer. I think he's the guy that I think is the least insane of all of them.
Yeah, but the bar is so high. It's kind of like saying you know, I guess that wild boar is the animal I think is least likely to kill me between like that, a crocodile, and a lion.
Right.
But I don't actually want to go take on a wild boar. No, thank you. Keep that out of my life. Like, all of these people are fun to watch, but I want nothing to do with them. It's the exact same way I feel when I watch reality TV. I love watching them on TV. I don't want to know any of these people in real life because they would ruin your life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
they're all awful.
My sort of... All right, I give in again. I thought that maybe I would find some smart thing to say to move us away from Tiger King, but I didn't.
Oh no!
And so, but then I came up with a question that I think that Stacey, you are uniquely equipped to answer about Tiger King. What is the? There is so much great television out there. I mean, it really is. I mean, this golden age of TV is just going on and on and on, and the stuff is like better than the movies and whatnot. But what is, in your mind, the particular athlete obsession with Tiger King? Because it seems like I haven't seen many shows. Game of Thrones got a little of this play. But Tiger King, you look at any athlete's Twitter feed, and they are going on and on about it. Why do you think this show in particular appeals to professional athletes at the degree that it has?
You know, my personal opinion, I'll tell you my personal opinion and then something I heard this morning that hasn't changed it but made me at least reconsider it. My personal opinion is just that there's nothing going on for everyone. And if if there's one, there's no good thing per se to come out of this really tragic time that we're in, and everyone's struggling to get through it, and everyone feels sad at a certain point of every day. Like, no one's having fun. It's awful. But if there's one thing that's helping people to get through it, I think it's collectively seeing certain things happen because nothing else is going on. We're all stuck at home. There's no sports. There are no events. There's no anything. And so something like a wacky reality show that's absolutely insane coming out on Netflix and then everyone watching it, talking about it, I think that athletes are just part of that community, right? I mean, a lot of them are in their 20s. They're on social media. They're all talking about it. But one thing I'll add that I didn't realize until this morning, and I don't know that every athlete feels this way. I don't even know that the majority of athletes feel this way, but Quandre Diggs, who's a safety for the Seahawks, was on with Danny and Gallant this morning on 710 ESPN, and they asked him about Tiger King because they were just talking about all kinds of stuff. And he has some fun theories, by the way, but they asked him, you know, like why he watched. And I think he said something along the lines of sometimes trying to distract himself from sports. And then I realized if you're a professional athlete, everyone's going through a hard time, but you're also in a weird time in your life where you're like, I don't know when my job is going to pick up. I know everyone feels this way, but it's like, I wonder if for some athletes, they're like, sports are my entire life.
Yeah, I think that's the difference.
And they're what I care passionately about, and I almost want a distraction from the fact that they're not here.
Well, and if you're not, say, Quandre, who actually is one of the more interesting people, I always think the guy has something very interesting to say almost all the time, but you are also, if you are an older athlete, this virus and the suspension of a season doesn't suspend your body clock, right? I mean, you have a limited amount of years to be able to play. And if you're on the older side of things and suddenly your season got one of the athletes I follow, who I'm sure no one else in this room even knows about, but who's a very accomplished, most accomplished ever motorcycle racer, a guy named Valentino Rossi, who's an Italian, and he's 41, which is ancient for that, but he's still very, very quick, very competitive, not quite as much as he used to be. This was going to be maybe his last year, maybe not his last year, and now he's like, it's another year ticks off and you're 42 suddenly. I mean, he's different, but I would imagine any player at 30 right now is feeling like this is precious time to be losing.
Yeah, and I mean, players older than that, too. I mean, obviously at 30, but you think of like Greg Olsen, this could very well be his last year in the league. He briefly considered retirement and eventually chose to stick with the Seahawks. Who knows if he'll have an off season? And then along those lines, guys that are with new teams that are hoping for maybe a prove it deal, or that are hoping for a last hurrah or a last chance to get to a Super Bowl, all of that's now kind of in jeopardy. And I know that I feel like I always have to preface all of this because I think sometimes people have a hard time empathizing with athletes who make a lot of money, but I think we can all empathize for anyone whose career and passion and future is very much in question.
Yeah.
Whatever that job is, this is impacting it. And I think now, if anything, it's a good time to be like, wow, this is a side of that that I didn't consider before. I really hope this works out for you. You know, like I would encourage in this time too, just kind of understanding that like, it's not easy for anyone, regardless of where you're coming from or what your job is. Everyone's kind of wondering what their future is going to be.
Everybody deserves a little compassion. Well said, Stacey.
Everyone.
Yeah.
Even Joe Exotic.
Even Joe. I had well, we're out of time.
Were you going to say Carol?
No, I wasn't going to.
Okay.
We'll just have to see when tomorrow we probably end up talking about this again. Stacey, Joe, thank you.
Our limit.
Thank you so much.
Thanks,
that
guys.
The prison collect call
Mike,
you just
we're
did?
Sorry.
Yeah, I know. The apologies are getting a little less genuine every time, but I get it.
I mean, the clock has been ticking for a while here, Mike.
Yeah,
I know. As soon it's going to become your fault for not joining in.
I know.
On the rest of society. thank you, Stacey. You can hear Stacey every day on Tom, Jake, and Stacey, noon to 3 on 710 ESPN Seattle. See you tomorrow, Stace.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we'll be back with What's on Your Mind right after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights, everybody. Mason, Mike, happy Monday to you. It's the end of the show for us, but the week is only beginning. See, there's always a silver lining.
There's four more shows of Cairo Nights just this week. Can you imagine it? 98973 is how you can tell us what's on your mind. We will certainly tell you because that is what this segment is called. Mike's here, of course. Frank's here. DB's here. Fellers, what's on your mind? Who wants to go first?
I'll jump.
Frank Shires.
I'm feeling cranky tonight.
Ooh.
I have been cranky ever since the superintendent of public instruction said that no school child will be harmed by not finishing the school year in classes, which is crap. As a teacher, as a person with a K-12 certificate, and a senior, a graduating senior, you're telling me that she doesn't get to graduate, she doesn't get any guidance in regards to college, she doesn't get any help in making sure her credits get done. We don't even know if she's going to get grades, right? Doesn't get to go to prom. No, she's not harmed.
Yeah.
No, there are no harms there. No, just don't, you know, sorry, wrong.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't think about that. But that's pretty tone deaf. I mean, think of all your senior year of high school.
Yeah. I mean, you may not like high school. Most people, I don't know a lot of people that really loved it.
I loved it.
But there are kids, you know, that are trying to, you know, plow through. And I just, the idea that nobody is going to be harmed by this, that's wrong. Remote learning cannot equal what you do in a regular classroom. So I'm cranky. Forgive me. I'm just.
I like cranky Frankie. We should bring him out more often. How about you, DB? What do you think?
I received a message tonight from my boss over at Starbucks, and she said we are officially now going to be wearing face masks when we are not N95 face masks, but face masks, face coverings of some sort. And I mean, it's about time. First off, today we were not required to wear them. We had one coworker who was. I sort of had a scarf, so people at the window, you know, you could communicate with them and sort of have it covered up. But now this is store wide. I'm not sure if this is company wide. I didn't hear any announcement from the higher ups in that concern. But it's just, it is really real. I know we keep on talking about it has been real now, but
yeah,
it is. To me, I have been holding off, to my own discredit, I've been holding off on wearing a face mask out in public just based on not wanting to admit that this stuff is, we have now hit the, you know, not apocalyptic, but what we are now seeing of people generally in public is a lot of people now are wearing the face masks, and I did not want to accept that, and now I am being forced to accept that, and I am definitely going to accept it, but it is, it's hard. It's now really setting in for me.
Yeah. How about you, Mike?
You know, I'm not entirely certain, but I guess one thing that's on my mind is that there has been a few nonprofits that have been doing grants. One, Bethany Jean Clement, who we've had on the show, wrote about in today's Seattle Times for service industry people. And there's a few out there, and there's a couple of collections. I would suggest looking at her story if you are a bartender or a server. And take a look at what might be available. These are small grants, but $500 is $500.
Yep.
Right. If you can get one before the pool of money is gone, do so. Apply for it. Yeah. I've told everyone who works for me, do this immediately. And I'm wading through all the other stuff to try to get that available for staff. And it feels like you know, like a second job, but the finish line is worth it if you can get some of that. I mean, if you can pass through those things and get them to people who need it, I mean, it's going to feel great. It just doesn't feel, it's hard at the front end, but it's way harder if you don't.
Yeah.
And it's way harder than what a future would be without it.
Yeah.
You know? So, or way easier than a future would be without it, rather.
Good luck with that.
You know what's on my mind?
What?
Mike started watching Parks and Rec.
Oh.
Yeah. Finally.
It's going to be a fun ride.
Yeah, he doesn't even know the treat he's in for.
Wow.
Nope. I'm constantly mentioning it.
Constantly.
Because it's one of my most mentioned
shows. Don't hang on to Mark Brandanowitz, because it ain't going
to
happen.
You know what I told? I told him to start at season 3.
Ah, great decision.
Just skip
decision.
The first
yes,
two.
Right. Absolutely. Right.
And he did, because it's garbage. It really, the first season is really just bad. And the second one is fine, it gets better as it goes, but season 3 is when it really
has its feet under it, and you don't miss out on anything. Like, the characters change so much, and that you can just start at 3 and you're good to go.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to you watching so we can all make references and leave Frank
and I will
out
finally
in the corner.
Yeah. Yeah. As usual.
That's all the time we got for tonight, friends. Thanks so much for listening to the show. We really appreciate you guys. For Mike Lewis, Frank Shires, DB, I'm Aaron Mason. Thank you for listening, and we will see you tomorrow.